Hi, I'm Advaas Saldanger, and you're listening to DevEx at the World Bank and IMF Meetings, a special edition of This Week in Global Development. Every year, in spring and fall, finance ministers, civil society organizations, and private sector financiers gather at the World Bank and IMF meetings to discuss the state of the global economy. With this year marking the 80th anniversary of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, a key question is whether these institutions are still fit for purpose given today's global challenges. Join us as we explore that question and share key insights from the meetings. IDA, or the International Development Association, is the World Bank's fund for the poorest countries. It provides grants and low-cost loans that countries can use for a variety of needs, from health to education to infrastructure. This year, it is up for replenishment, and so the bank is going to donors to ask for a new influx of capital. 1.9 billion people live in countries that receive IDA funding. That includes 90% of people globally who are facing hunger and malnutrition. One third of those IDA countries are poorer today than before the COVID-19 pandemic. Of the 75 IDA-eligible countries, 39 are in sub-Saharan Africa, and 33 are considered fragile and conflict-affected. World Bank President Ajay Banga has called for the biggest IDA replenishment ever, asking donors to increase their contributions by about 25%. The bank hopes to get between $28 and $30 billion from donors, which the bank could then leverage to add up to about $100 billion. But getting there could be hard, as donors face political and fiscal challenges at home. In this episode, we explore the IDA replenishment, what the fund does, and what is at stake. I spoke with Gargi Ghosh, the president of global advocacy and policy at the Gates Foundation, and asked her what makes IDA different from other funding and why it's such an emphasis this year, including at the spring meetings.
What is really unique about IDA is how much countries feel this is their money. This isn't just about relying on a charity model, but actually a source of financing from the World's Bank that is their resourcing. And so there's a degree of ownership in the way I understand and observe IDA to be programmed that is really exciting. What that means is IDA is often used to build systems that have longevity in a country. Just take the healthcare example where we work very deeply. It's IDA resources that often build health systems infrastructure, health management information systems that are part of the predictable long-term infrastructure that countries rely on for their ongoing programming. IDA has rarely been more needed as a source of financing for developing countries around the world. It also is a critical year because it's a year when we need to reverse actually a trend line of diminishing donor contributions to IDA. So this takes a minute to explain because when you look at the headline numbers, IDA has actually been going up over the past few replenishment cycles. Those headline numbers are made up of three component parts: donor contributions that are new, money that's recycled within the World Bank Group system from other sources of capital, and going to the bond markets, which was an innovation that IDA piloted a few years ago. So those three components, when you add them up, they've been going up. But when you look at the specific portion of that, that is donor contributions, that's been going down in real terms for quite some time.
To understand firsthand what IDA means to countries that receive its funding, I spoke with Malawi's ambassador to the U.S., Justice Chombo, about what the funds have meant for her country.
Well, I would say that without IDA, Malawi will perish. Not necessarily because of mismanagement and so on, but I know that you are aware of the climate shock that Malawi has been receiving for the past 4 years, where every time we try to reach good targets, we find that something comes and, you know, all our efforts are swept away. Infrastructure has been affected. As we are speaking now, Malawi has flooding. And, you know, we've just come from a situation of drought. And so the lake is, is swelling up. We have seen that there's, a lot of water coming from Tanzania. And all of this is impacting the environment in Malawi. It's affecting the food security, because now, as people are trying to harvest what was in their gardens, the floods have come. The coming of IDA and that replenishment is actually a human right for the people of Malawi. We do realize that there's a lot of work that is going on. There are a lot of countries that are in need, but Malawi is standing in a very peculiar situation today. You know, through IDA, we've been doing irrigation and, helping people, funding construction, equipping health facilities, training healthcare workers, and implementing programs that combat malaria, HIV, maternal mortality, and all that. Unless there is a bigger trench with what has been going on, I don't see Malawi recovering in the near future. So I cannot overemphasize the help, or let me say, the transformation that IDA has been doing in Malawi.
Yeah, and I guess, are there specific things that you want to see in terms of how IDA could change or be better in terms of mm-hmm. being a funder or partner for Malawi in this replenishment? Because it's often also an opportunity to think about the institution itself and how it could evolve.
What I would say, we need more capacitating of people. I believe that if people are given the capacity to stand on their own, like helping them to have that training as technical assistance. We are now talking of commercialization of agriculture. We need, I think, a capacity building that is beyond what is already happening in Malawi. Digitalization, I think, will bring a lot of improvement. Digitalization, not just in government, but capacitating the people who are producing the crops, who are doing the work on the ground. How can we empower them so that they have more in their hands that can help them to produce more food, that can help them to even strengthen structures of governance?
Are you looking for the inside story on what's happening at organisations like the World Bank, USAID or the Gates Foundation? Then you need to be reading DevEx Pro. I'm Jessica Abrahams and I'm the editor of DevEx Pro. Pro is DevEx's premium news subscription, where our expert reporters and analysts take you beyond the headlines, deep into the trends and institutions shaping the $200 billion aid industry. As well as all our news, you'll get access to conversations with global development leaders, resources to help you grow in your career, and a subscriber-only newsletter full of insider news and tidbits. See for yourself by getting a free trial today at devx.com/pro.
I also caught up with Sarah Maka, the Africa Executive Director at the One Campaign, and asked her about the impacts of IDA in other African countries.
So IDA, because it's the single largest concessional funding available to countries, becomes really important, even in the context in which we're in, with the fiscal constraints, the debt distress that countries are feeling from pandemic to the Ukraine-Russia war, to the moment in which we're in now with Israel-Gaza, and there's so many other geopolitical things pulling at the attention of donor countries, quite frankly. So for a country as small as the Gambia, with 2.9 million people, IDA is the only game in town. Meaning if IDA wasn't available to them, they actually will not have another resource, an environment to get funding. Now let me paint this picture. When COVID struck the Gambia, the number one source of funding for the Gambia is tourism. When we had a lockdown, there was very little on tourism. So their sources of funding dried up immediately. Now IDA walks into the room and they have actually an opportunity to get funding. So what they did is they used this funding for energy generation, and they start to build their infrastructure. So the interesting story from the Gambia is because they had some infrastructure in the cities, in the rural area, they didn't have as much infrastructure, using this IDA funds to build more infrastructure in the rural area. The rural area currently has more steady power than the urban area. So what is happening is people are moving to the rural area because power doesn't just mean a light bulb is on. It means education can happen. It means entrepreneurship can happen. It means people can find livelihood and unleash the entrepreneurial spirit. That's what a fund like IDA will make in a country like the Gambia. Now, the Gambia is a small country. So let's move to Nigeria. Nigeria has a very ambitious national development strategy. And 35% of its funding is coming from IDA. It does have a low tax to GDP ratio, which it's trying to build. But if 35% of its funding didn't exist, Nigeria would struggle even more than it is. And as we speak, there's about a 30%+ rate inflation, which means you buy food today, the next day it's up by 30%. So what Nigeria has used IDA for over the years, and it's in the last 9 years or so, Nigeria has received about $10.9 billion in IDA. It's used it for about 1 million people, cash transfers. It's used it for improving infrastructure in schools and healthcare centers. It's also used it for infrastructure development. This translates into job creation. In a country like Kenya, they've used it for human capital development services, but have also used it for governance. And this is also another part of IDA that I think is important. They've used it to improve their budgeting ability. They've used it to patch up some leakage within the government. In Nigeria, because of the IDA funding, 55% of contracts are available online, as opposed to 23% in the previous decade, which means that people can engage more with the government. There's a lot more transparency. We can stamp out some leakages that happen when things are shrouded in darkness.
I also asked her what she's hearing from African countries that they want in this IDA replenishment and what she'd like to see from the bank.
So if I could say the three things that we're really hearing is, the first is around those country partnership frameworks and the indicators, a bit more a calling for focus, because these are countries that sometimes absorbing IDA can be challenging because of how small the country is. We talk about the Gambia, it's tiny. If a country doesn't have as much capacity, they need a lot more hand-holding to actually absorb the IDA resources. And so if such a country then has a breadth of indicators to adhere to in the next 30 to 50 years, it can be really challenging for them. So how do we tailor those indicators to the size of countries and to what countries have? And at the end of the day, the bottom line is fewer but deeper indicators for countries so we can see impact and not spreading them and their attention and their time too thin. So that's the first one. The second is just the volumes of funding available. And the third is the concessionality nature. Again, the fiscal environment we're working with is much, much different than many countries have ever worked with. So this becomes really important. So I really want the World Bank to be listening to their clients again. And they will see, and I'm sure they're observing, there's not a lot of divergence between what the World Bank wants and what the countries are looking for. It's around human capital development sort of increase and reinforcing. there's a big need for jobs and job creation, economic revitalization. But I also don't want the World Bank to forget about the governance element. And yes, there is a demand for governance from many countries, and I can speak for African countries. But I think there needs to be a bit more pressure there because the citizens want to know what's going on.
In my reporting, I had heard from advocates and experts that they would really like to hear the World Bank articulate a clearer vision for this IDA replenishment. So I asked Dirk Reinerman, the director of IDA Resource Mobilization and IBRD Corporate Finance at the World Bank, what his pitch is.
The value proposition, if I can put it like this, for IDA on impact is very strong for a variety of reasons. IDA is a bit of a unique instrument in the world of official development assistance for a number of reasons. One is it is the largest concessional fund, right, that provides funding either on grant terms or on highly concessional below market, in other words, financial terms. That's unique, and it is a bank. It is AAA rated, so we are able to leverage every dollar that comes in 3.5 times. So for every dollar that donors give us, we can provide $3.5 worth of impact, right? That's a very important value proposition, in particular at a time when our donor partners, of course, are also constrained back home, right?
I also asked Dirk Reinerman about how IDA will change in this replenishment and what it will prioritize, especially as the bank continues its reform process.
This is a unique replenishment also because it comes in the middle of an evolution discussion where we have given the institution a new vision and mission. We've agreed on a new financial model, and we've agreed on many elements and improvements on the operational model, whether it's the crisis response toolkit or the climate response debt clauses, etc. We've made so many innovations and changes. And in principle, of course, all of these changes apply to our middle-income country window, IBRD, as much as they apply to IDA. There's an element of applying what we've just agreed with our shareholders in evolution into the IDA context, clear. But there's also continuity, because IDA 20 is working quite well. We had our midterm review at Zanzibar. We're on track on virtually all of the indicators. So it's IDA 20 is not broken, right? So how do you do continuity and the alignment with evolution at the same time? And that's a balancing act. Under the leadership of President Banga, we're looking at simplifying our procedures so that we can also move faster. So that's one piece of the puzzle of the IDA replenishment, is to try and make it much less transaction intensive for the client countries ultimately, because they need to move the needle. We can only support them. The other piece, of course, is the bigger. We've talked about the needs. But then substantively, there are going to be a lot of discussions around what should we invest in, what are the priorities. Now, on that, if you look around, the needs are great across the board, but if you don't have priorities, of course, then you can't have as much impact. So we see that we have a very significant indebtedness situation out there. More and more countries are highly indebted. So we will continue to address that through strongly what we call net positive flows. So IDA provides about $18 billion in net positive flows every year. Last year, that helps these countries manage their fiscal situation, their debt situation, stay afloat, stay solvent, stay liquid. That's absolutely critical that we do this. And of course, at the same time, work with these countries to improve their debt transparency, their debt management, etc. That's going to be a big topic. The second area that I would identify is the area of fragility, conflict, and violence, FCV as we call it. And there, again, the number of countries that are affected by fragility and by conflict has gone up over the past few years. We need to better understand the drivers of those conflicts, be able to be more, even more than we are doing already in the space of prevention, try and help these countries prevent the outbreaks and the tensions of conflict. So that's going to be a very important piece of the puzzle as well. Then, of course, we already talked about climate action. That means for IDA countries, primarily adaptation, but not just, because they also need to improve their energy access. So these are some of the very concrete things that we'll be working on. This is a process. It goes until December. I would highlight that we're also looking forward to hear from heads of state. President Ruto of Kenya is hosting a summit, heads of state summit, on the 29th of April. They're working very actively on this. And we will hear from the heads of state of Africa in this case, but also others will be invited. We'll hear directly from them what the needs are, and that will inform the package that we will put together. But I think the ones that I've mentioned, jobs, climate, fragility, debt, those are going to be the big headlines. Human capital, right? Education, health is going to be very important.
Dirk Reinerman acknowledged that it isn't an easy replenishment, and that while many donors have signaled support, the fiscal and political picture is challenging. Partly because of that challenge, there seems to be a bigger advocacy effort around replenishment this year. What is often a negotiation behind closed doors is much more public. I asked Gargi Ghosh about that and how the Gates Foundation is involved.
We have the pleasure, privilege of funding advocacy groups in this country and many countries around the world who have been very, very active on specific issues. IDA had really been a governmental negotiation, and still at its heart is. But in the conversations we were having leading up to this replenishment with the bank in shareholder markets, it really felt like this was a year where the fiscal, maybe the political situation was tough enough that we would need to do a little more explaining about why IDA mattered and why IDA was important. And so we did try to add our own voice and have also helped advocates add their voices to support IDA this year. We're in a very difficult fiscal time for many countries around the world. And so we are going to be trying to replenish IDA in a moment that is very tough for many donors. To me, we can ask all we want, but really proving that this is a source of financing that works and that is valued is going to be essential. When we talk with countries around the world, I'm always quite reassured how strong the support is for IDA as an efficient vehicle to fund development. So I think the starting point is there. I think most countries are waiting for that super compelling vision. What are we funding? Not just an institution, but we need to be funding progress. So I think that'll be really important. And then I think the, frankly, the negotiation that always goes into, I'm willing to go higher, but I want to do this with others. How do we make that work? That is something the bank is skilled at and is going to need to be better at than ever this year, because we know that donors want to come in, they want to replenish this vehicle, and they're going to need help getting the kind of numbers and the kind of support to do that, domestic support to do that.
Thanks for listening to DevEx at the World Bank and IMF meetings, a special edition of This Week in Global Development. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it, or you can leave us a rating or review. We'd also love to hear from you if you have any feedback or want to get in touch. You can find me on social media at @advasal or send an email to podcast@devex.com. DevEx at the World Bank and IMF meetings is hosted by me, Advas Saldinger. Today's episode was edited by Catherine Girardot.